listening to Loving BDSM Podcast, episode 143. Kayla Lord's here with the one, the only, the dude who forgot how to do his job when I was gone for a week, John Brownstown.
Oh, give me a break.
Telling all your secrets. This week, we're talking about the assumptions that people make in their own DS relationships about their partner and about the relationship, and why most of that is really just a communication problem.
Well,
Yeah, I hope you agree with the premise. You're about to have the conversation too, right?
I was just assuming I would, yeah.
Okay, good. I'm going to keep doing this thing that yes. I do. Okay. Welcome to the Loving BDSM Podcast. If this is your first time listening, glad to have you. And yes, it's like this all the time. If you're back for another week, welcome back. Loving BDSM is produced every Friday for your kinky pleasure and education, and show notes are found at lovingbdsm.net. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite podcast app. If you love what you hear, we'd love a good review wherever you listen to us to help other kinksters find us. You can follow the show on Twitter at LovingBDSM, on FetLife at LovingBDSMPC, on Instagram at that handle I hate, LovingDS and the number one, or on YouTube at YouTube.com/LovingBDSM. All links are in the show notes, and you can actually watch this on YouTube. Yeah. And if you are watching us on YouTube, a link to the show notes page is in the description. This week's episode is sponsored by Delirium Toys. At Delirium Toys, you will find a gorgeous selection of fetish sex toys as well as classic favorites. Check out vibrators, nipple clamps, cock rings, even latex outfits. Their fetish section is better than most online sex toy stores that I've seen in the past, so definitely give them a look. And if you shop in August 2018, y'all, you can save 30% off your purchase with our code LOVEBDSM2018. That's all one word, LOVEBDSM2018. So go to deliriumtoys.com and use code LOVEBDSM2018 when you shop. A couple of announcements.
Okay.
They're real quick. There's some announcements we've been doing all month.
Okay.
The giveaway is still going. It runs through the end of the month of August. And we actually have an episode coming out on the last day of August. I just looked at the calendar.
Ah.
And so therefore, there will be one last teeny tiny little reminder. But if you have not entered or if you only entered once, there are ways to enter multiple times to get multiple entries to increase your chances of winning. Just a reminder, it's a spreader bar. It's a couple little kinky odds and ends from Kink Crate, who are awesome. And it is your choice of either a paddle or cane from John Brownstone. So even if you've bought something from the shop, the Kinky Fucker you shop in the past, if there's something that he's made that you don't have yet and you win, you can pick that.
You can pick that. Yep.
So yes, definitely enter the giveaway. Link is in the show notes. And if you follow us on Twitter, you definitely would see it there. We do have two sales going on right now. One at thewooddom.com.
Yes.
That is the vanilla side, y'all.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the Kinky Fuckery shop, which is shop.kaylalords.com. Mm-hmm. Again, the links are in the show notes page. Don't think you have to memorize those links. But for the month of August at either store, if you use the code NEWSHOP, you save 10%.
Yeah.
I know.
And just
for YouTube viewers.
For YouTube viewers.
Yes. So if you want to see this, you have to go to YouTube. Within the first 5 minutes, he's showing off one of his really pretty pins.
That's one of the princess pins.
Yeah, princess pins. Some of the pins are definitely baby girl pins. Like, they just are.
One more, and then we'll move on.
Right. Four. So the first pin for podcast listeners was pink and white and sparkly. And the second one he's holding up is blue and wood. What?
It's actually grapevine, California grapevine cast in acrylic, blue and white acrylic.
It's very, very cool. If you aren't going to go to YouTube and look at that, that's fine. If you go to thewooddom.com, you will see all of them. Plus, just a another reminder, we are on Patreon and you can become a kinky patron for as little as a dollar a month.
Mm-hmm.
We share behind the scenes stuff. We have a special patron only podcast for anybody at any level. Right before I went on vacation, was it? I mailed out cards at $10 and up. We mail stuff out to you. And I did a special local artist card for all of those patrons. And it was beautiful. And it has a mermaid on the front, which is appropriate because I love mermaids. So.
And you also get sneak peeks of what I'm playing
with in the shop. And a certain someone is making something. Do you think they'll be ready for September?
Oh, definitely will be.
Okay. He's making a special paddle, right?
Yes.
From a special wood.
Yes.
That will be available in the shop
in
September. But if you're a patron, you get to see it first. And
yes.
Yeah, there. It's definitely unique. It's not like anything you've got in the shop right now at all.
No.
No. So it's going to be awesome when it comes out.
Yes, it is.
And don't worry, if you are not a patron, we will be talking about it when it happens. So don't worry, you're not going to miss out completely. But if you like to know stuff first and help us do the thing we do, you can be a patron. Mm-hmm. So all those links are in the show notes. So definitely go check all that out. Okay. So I came back. I went on vacation.
Yeah.
Without you.
Correct.
Just not my favorite thing to do.
No,
mine but I either. Did have a good time, and we'll talk about that in the bonus section. Worry there. But I came back to a lot of emails from people, and I actually left. Ooh, and there were baby got a bubble.
Yeah,
baby had a bubble. there were a lot of emails before I left, and I just ran out of time and just couldn't answer them all. And it's all of those emails that led to today's topic. And it's not just the people who emailed me in the past couple weeks. If you're listening later, this is August 2018. So it's not just those people. It's a trend I see in a lot of the messages we get.
Yeah.
And it's the language that we see used. It's should, ought to, I'm sure. When somebody says I'm sure, but they're talking about their partner, I'm sure my dominant feels this way. I'm sure my submissive feels that way. What I tend to find out in the conversation is that they don't actually know they've made an assumption. And I think we all know the old expression about what happens when you assume.
Make an ass out of you and me.
Right. And if you don't know that, that's your tidbit thing you learned today. But assumptions, for the most part, tend to be communication problems.
Yeah.
And I often feel kind of bad when I'm helping somebody because I can never give a concrete answer, hey, do this, because first of all, what I might do might not be what somebody else would do. But second of all, the answer is almost always that you have to have a conversation with your partner. Like whatever the problem is, the first step to figuring it out is always to have the conversation. But if you ever wonder, is this a moment when I should have a conversation? First of all, the default is usually yes. Just go with that. But two, it's to check your assumptions. If you believe but have never been told, or it's been a long time since you've been told, or you thought you might have heard something 6 months ago, 6 years ago, it's definitely time for a conversation. I don't care how long you've been with somebody, you're never going to be completely right about what you think that they're thinking.
Well, this should be a creed, okay? Especially where dominance are concerned. Okay, listen carefully, everybody. Dominants are not mind readers. Okay, got that? Right?
That's very true.
Yeah.
Well, not deny that.
And on the other side of that coin, submissives are not mind readers.
Nope.
Now, submissives and dominants may be very intuitive about things.
Especially when you've been together for a while.
Especially when you've been together for a while. I will say that submissives can be very intuitive. You pick up on cues. You pick up on body language, tones, things like that. And that's all very well and good. But unless you work for the psychic hotline, you don't know what's going in. You don't totally know what's going on inside somebody's mind until you ask.
Exactly. And that's the hardest part, because what gets people wound up, and this happens on both sides of the slash. So yes, I hear primarily from submissives, but we do hear from dominants who go through this as well. And they say, I'm sure that they think, and they meaning their partner, I'm sure my partner thinks this. I'm sure my partner believes this. Well, are you sure? Because you're making an assumption, or because you've had the conversation and your partner straight up told you, this is what I think, this is what I believe. So anytime you are making a supposition about what you think is going on between you and your partner, no, stop. Before you email me, and I'll take any email I get, y'all know me, it might take me a while to answer, but I will send them my way. But before you email somebody on the internet who you think might be able to help you, stop and say, have I actually talked to my partner about this? Have we had a conversation? Have I said to them, I'm getting this vibe from you and I'm worried. I'm getting this feeling from you and I don't know what it means. I'm scared that this is happening in our relationship. Like whatever it is, the first step, and the step I'm gonna tell you 99.999% of the time, is that you have to have a conversation with one another. So you might as well cut out the middleman here, cut me out completely, and just have a conversation with each other. And the thing is I know there are people who are going to say, but I'm afraid. Well, if you are afraid to have a conversation with your partner, a couple things are going on. One, you might not be in a healthy relationship. If you are fearful of communicating, that's a sign that either something's not right in the relationship, and hopefully it's not that, or two, you haven't gotten as far along in your DS as you'd like to, because the only reason any type of BDSM works, whether it's a DS relationship or it's just a scene, is that the two people or however many people involved have to communicate. You have to have conversations with each other.
They're, you know, if you have trust enough in somebody, okay, especially if your relationship encompasses any kind of S&M, sadism, masochism, you should have enough trust to be able to approach your partner with anything you need to talk about.
Right. Now, okay. That doesn't mean the conversation might be easy. It might be, there might be a problem, and you might be upset about something or worried that they are upset about something, and maybe they are upset about something, and you might be a little worried about this conversation, and you don't quite know what's going to happen. The answer is not to not have the conversation.
Right.
The answer is to have the conversation, try to set the stage for it so that it hopefully goes as well as possible, and work through it and have the disagreement or have the misunderstanding or say the hard thing. And yeah, you might hurt somebody's feelings. Most of the time, though, especially if you're in a solid, mostly healthy, mostly decent relationship, when you say something that hurts the other person's feelings, it's not insurmountable. You either apologize for it, or you explain yourself, or they realize that they needed to hear some tough love and they needed to get told a harsh thing. This is the reality of communicating in a relationship that's going to go anywhere. And y'all, that's certainly not just DS. I have often thought that non-DS, non-kinky couples could probably stand to use a lot of the tips we talk about, because this is relationship 101. This is how to deal with other people that we care about. I don't care what your flavor is, okay?
True.
So when I said set the stage for to have the best outcome in a conversation, we've talked about that in the past, but let's do a refresher here. So you try to make sure there's as few distractions as possible. So you try and schedule this conversation. You try to plan for it. You say to your partner, I've got something I really need to talk to you about. When would be the best possible time to talk about it? When can we sit down? When can I get your undivided attention? This is really important. Now, never pretended I don't have trust issues. I still have trust issues. I actually will use that as a sign. If my partner blows me off, thankfully, I've got John Brownstone, that's not an issue. But if my partner blows me off and says, yeah, we'll talk, but I can't get them to commit to a conversation with me, then we have another problem on top of everything else, okay?
True.
Because this does not work without communication, and you have to be willing to have these conversations. But I also had to learn, as an impatient baby girl, that just because I wanted to have a conversation right this second, does not mean that's when we're going to have the conversation either. And that really does work on both sides of the slash. So yes, as a submissive, I approach John Brownstone. If I have something I want to talk about and I say, hey, I need to talk to you. When can we do this? Can we talk now? What works?
Right.
And he gets to decide. But you give me the same courtesy back.
I do.
Every time. It's not because he's the dominant that I ask. He asks me too. Hey, I need to talk to you about something. When will you be free to have this conversation? When can we sit down? When can I have your undivided attention? Or the way you do it most often is, hey, we're going to go for our Friday night coffee. There's something I want to talk to you about. Now, I'm anxious. So the moment he says there's something he wants to talk about, I go, is everything okay? Are you upset with me?
Is it about us? I have to qualify that in saying everything's fine. Just something's been on my mind we need to talk about.
Right.
That will be the time to bring it up.
But when you can do it, when you're both in a place where you know you're about to have a conversation, there's as few distractions as possible. Sometimes it's harder than others. If you are a parent, there's a damn good chance you're going to have some distractions.
Right.
Sometimes life is so hectic, you can kind of only do these things on the kind of on the go.
On the fly.
If you're in a long distance relationship, you're almost never going to get to have these serious conversations face to face the way you'd like to. Sometimes you have to do them over the phone. Sometimes you have to do them over Skype, whatever. Right. We have had very serious discussions by email.
Correct.
That was early days when it was still easier for me to write out what I needed to say. But as long distance,
yet here's the thing. Communication is communication. Sometimes, I mean, this beautiful baby girl sitting next to me right here that I love so very dearly, coming up on almost 6 years together soon.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
There are times, as much as I find it ironic, her being the wordsmith has trouble finding her words at times.
It's hard to say those things.
Has trouble using her words at times.
Yes.
So even though we're almost 6 years into our relationship, there are times when there is something on her mind, she will still text me, even though I am just out in the garage.
I have emailed you while you were sitting across the room from
you
me.
You have emailed
just
me
in the past couple weeks.
Yes.
Because I couldn't say it.
Because, yes, she couldn't say it. But it was easier for her to get the words out by writing them, by texting them. Communication is communication.
Right. It's not the method matters, doesn't matter at all when you compare it to the fact that you just got to get the words out.
Right.
You've got to let your partner know what's on your mind, what you're concerned about, what you're thinking about. But you also have to, and this is the other side of communication we've talked about in the past, you've also got to be willing to listen. So that means that if you've made an assumption about how your partner feels about something, good or bad, and you've realized, oh crap, I've made an assumption, we have to have this conversation. You then have to listen to what your partner says. It's not just a word vomit dump on them of all the things I need to tell John Brownstone, and he just better sit there and take it. I then have to be emotionally mature enough, and this sometimes takes time, always takes practice, to sit and listen to his reaction. And I might not like his reaction. He might tell me things I didn't want to necessarily know. He might confirm my suspicions and my assumptions, and that can be scary. He might tell me he didn't appreciate my tone. He might tell me that what I was telling him has upset him. Those are very real possibilities. Knowing that, you cannot avoid having the conversation because your relationship can't grow, it can't go anywhere, and most of the time it's going to go backwards and it's going to get bad if you can't talk to each other, even when it's something you don't necessarily want to hear from the other person, or it's not something that you want to deal with in your relationship, because it's possible that your partner over there is saying there's a problem, and you're the one who's actually avoiding the conversation. And you're the one that's not making the time to talk to your partner and to deal with whatever it is. And that could be because you're making your own assumptions too about what they think or what they feel or what they want. Y'all, I know people who've been together 30 years and they're still not trying to assume they know what the other person wants. We've been together nearly 6 years and I'm not assuming I know. Now, the way I do it, because I know I make assumptions, everybody makes them. I mean, it's a universal thing. I'll say something to the effect of, so what I think is happening is this. Am I right? And do I get a little, you know, full of myself when I find out I was right? Yes, I do. Because it tells me that my instincts are, it's like a test for my intuition. Was my intuition right? Yeah, it was. But sometimes I'm dead ass wrong. I'm like, you're mad at me, aren't you? He's like, I wasn't even thinking about you. Something happened in the shop, or something's going on online, or I was just counting in my head. I was thinking of wood, like it's nothing. And I have let my own anxieties and my own bad tapes and my own fears and my own trust issues decide for me what's real. So it still happens, and I don't care how long you're together or how close you are, you cannot not assume. And it is easy for all of us to fall into that trap, especially when you have been together for a while, because we do base our thoughts of today on what might have happened yesterday or 6 months ago. So I'm not telling you that it'll never happen to you or there's something wrong if you walk around assuming things are going on. What I'm saying is the moment you hear yourself saying should, or I'm sure of, or I think, or clearly they, you know, fill in the blank. And I say things like that all the time. you're making assumptions. And until you're told straight up by your partner, you don't actually know.
And the worst thing about assumptions, when you make assumptions, is you are setting yourself up to fall down a rabbit hole.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Okay? Because you're assuming that you this thing in your mind, and you've probably run this whole scenario.
Oh, yeah. I know a lot of us do.
You know, and especially if you're an overthinker.
Which many of us are.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you just spiral. You just spiral down with that assumption.
And what you've done in your mind is you've created this massive problem. Like you might be at that point in your head where you are convinced your relationship is over. Your partner mm-hmm. doesn't want you. This is not going to work. And it's all because you had one thought that led to another, that led to another. And nowhere in the middle did you have the conversation with the other person. The other person is blissfully unaware.
The proverbial mountain out of a molehill.
Absolutely. I am guilty of it. I am better than I used to be.
Yeah.
Because what I've learned to do, I have not learned how to stop myself from worrying or imagining the worst case scenario. That is kind of a part of who I am. But I have taught myself, and it's a skill. It takes practice. You won't get it right at first.
No.
But I have taught myself to stop and ask. And on the same side, because sometimes in a relationship, both of you are anxious and you're worriors. And I can't really imagine. I'm kind of grateful that is not the situation here, that one of us not named Kayla Lords is calm. But at the same time, while I was learning to ask instead of make an assumption and get worried and go down that rabbit hole, you, Jim Brownstone, had to learn that when I get like that and I start asking questions, are we okay? You can't dismiss me either.
No.
Because see, what would happen is the one of us who's not the worrier can't understand why I'm asking all these questions. And it's like, it's fine. It's fine. But that doesn't help me. And we talked about this just a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
So it's a give and take on that. So one of you, maybe both of you, have to learn how to ask, why is this happening? What's going on? Whatever your mm-hmm. anxiousness is filling in the blanks for you in your head. And the other one of you has to learn how to be willing to at least say, it's not anything bad, or it's just about this, or, you know, and don't worry is not the right response, because the moment you tell me not to worry, I have to worry five times harder. Like, that's just a rule. You know, if you have to give me the reason why I don't have to worry. And I
that rule needs to be rewritten.
I know. And I admit that once I find out that I really don't have anything to worry about, every single time I go, oh, that wasn't so bad. And I feel ridiculous every single time that happens, but it happens every time. So there are those assumptions and all of those assumptions. I mean, I had an email recently from a listener who I mean, I could just feel the pain emanating off the screen of my laptop. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And there was nothing I could tell her to do other than you have to have a conversation and you've got to figure this out together. And it's about what your partner says and what you say, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then it was about a week later and they emailed me back and said, you know, I took some time and I thought about it and we had a conversation and I got clear understanding and I do feel better. And I thought, okay, good.
It's amazing how that happens.
It is amazing
how
that happens. And I really think that if more people just kind of develop that habit, that before you panic, you have a conversation with the other person involved, most of the time there's no need to panic. Most of the time it's our trust issues. It's our bad tapes. It's what was done to us in a previous relationship. And we're holding our current partner to a standard that they don't even know about most of the time, let alone can they meet. Mm-hmm. Because we are in our heads comparing them to whoever came before and whoever fucked us up before. And then if we happen to have a mental health issue that we deal with, then there's that to combat at the same time. So the best habit, I can just tell you, is the moment you start assuming something that you swear you know, that you're absolutely sure of, but you haven't actually heard from your partner, the very first step is to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not the only assumption that happens in DS. Assumptions happen all the time. We know this. But there's a flip side to the assumption.
Ooh, do tell.
And it is the other kind of email I've been getting lately.
Okay.
So the emails are cyclical. I'll go weeks and it's very, very quiet. And then out of nowhere.
When it rains, it pours.
Oh my gosh, there's a lot. And so I've seen two different types of assumptions. And that's why this whole episode is about assumptions. The second is the assumption about what DS is supposed to be. Now, this comes in many, many forms and flavors, and I think everybody goes through it a little bit, because you learn about DS, BDSM from something you read, something you watched, some podcast you listened to. Whatever format you learn about it, you start making assumptions about what it must mean, because you only maybe have a few examples to go by. And if you have consumed some kind of media that turns you on, like erotica or porn or whatever, you may fixate on those things because you know you like them, right? So what happens is people make assumptions about what DS is. They make assumptions about who they're supposed to be in a DS relationship. And if your assumption is correct and that is part of who you are, you're usually fine. You don't really even notice it because you're like, oh, I'm doing this thing that feels good and it's great. This is what DS is. But if you're like, I don't know, most people I've met, you don't fit whatever that stereotype is. And we all have a different stereotype in our head, I think. A lot of us have similar stereotypes about age, about weight, about certain characteristics. You know, if we feel older, or we feel larger, or we feel this, or we feel that, we may have those feelings like, oh, maybe we're not really DS. Maybe I don't fit the mold or whatever. But
break the mold.
Please break the mold. But the one where I hear it the most, and it's what started our conversation for episode, 142 on Caregiver Little? And I heard it after that episode, and I heard it before that episode. We'd recorded it, but then somebody else emailed me, and it was like, oh, just wait till this next episode. And it's this idea in that case, in that very specific case, they had an assumption about what Caregiver Little was. They didn't like what they thought it was, so therefore they rejected it completely. And then they hear somebody else talk about it from a completely different perspective, and they go, oh, actually, you're kind of describing me. And wait, that might work for me. Now, just because you see some similarities between yourself and somebody else in their dynamic still doesn't mean you're supposed to even go down that rabbit hole. The thing about DS relationships, and we say this all the time in different ways and in different episodes, is that it's whatever you want it to be. You and your consenting partner, okay? So it doesn't matter if it doesn't look like anybody else's. It doesn't matter if it doesn't sound like anybody else's. It doesn't matter if you use titles and labels that nobody else that you know uses. It doesn't matter if you reject all titles and labels. Mm-hmm. Like, the way you set up your DS relationship, your power exchange, in whatever way that works for you is valid. So when you find yourself looking out, usually online, right, into the world, and you're like, oh, well, there's this DS couple, there's that DS couple, you know, they seem really happy, that seems really popular, a lot of people seem to like this, that, all those things we start thinking of, and then we compare ourselves and we don't measure up to it, that it's just as hard a habit to break as the not communicating thing.
Yeah,
because some people are really good at this. They don't care if they don't fit in. They don't care if they're different from everybody. They're fairly confident in who they are, and they just live their life. I'm truly not like that. I have spent most of my life trying to fit in, and funnily enough, it was when I found sex blogging and my kink side that doesn't fit in with anybody I knew in my life prior that I went, oh, fuck it, I don't care. But I still do care. You know, I still have those moments when I say...
I am who I am.
Yes, you are. And yes, I am. Yes. And yes, everybody is. But yes, I still have those moments where I think, maybe I'm not submissive enough. Maybe I'm not really submissive. Maybe I'm not this. Maybe I'm not that.
But it comes down to, again, what we say again and again and again. It is all... It's all on a spectrum.
Yes. Every bit of it.
Every bit of it. I had been talking with a woman who identifies as a sensualist.
Okay.
And has been exploring S&M and a master-slave.
Okay. Dynamic?
Dynamic, thank you. And she came to realize that, oh, maybe this is not who I am. I like some pain, but not extreme pain.
Yeah.
And I kind of like the the aspect of a DS relationship with a certain amount of power exchange, but not to the point of giving up everything as a master and slave.
Right.
So, am I maybe not submissive? Mm-hmm. Okay. No, it means you are not the far end of that spectrum.
Right. You tried one end of the spectrum, realized it didn't work. It doesn't mean the whole thing doesn't work.
Right.
It means what you're trying doesn't work, and you can go try something
else. You can scale it back as much as you want. It
exactly.
doesn't make you any less a masochist or any less a submissive.
It's not that much different from the idea of being poly or being in an mm-hmm. open relationship. We've had these conversations. There was a time I would have told you that hell no, I don't share, and hell no, I'm not poly, and yeah, I'm monogamous, and mm-hmm. oh yeah, and until I wasn't, until I realized that I could feel something different. And for some people, I'm not that much different. It's situational. Depends on the people, depends on the moment, depends on this, depends on that. I think very few of us are all one thing all the time, every moment of every day. Even those of us who are on like the far end of as submissive as you can possibly get, there might still be moments where maybe not, you know, maybe it's a little lighter for you, or there's some situation that you haven't even been in yet, that you can't mm-hmm. even conceive of yet. That maybe you'll never be in, but is always a possibility where you might have a different reaction.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean the way you've been up until that point is somehow invalid. It's just another layer of who you are.
But it just goes to show how even about yourself, in regards to trying to identify yourself, how you can even make assumptions about you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and it makes sense that that would happen. You live with yourself all the time. Most of us gravitate towards what's the most comfortable, what we're used to, what we understand, what mm-hmm. we know. And it is very easy to, pardon the phrase, assume that that's all there is to who you are, because that's what you know. And it's not until you're thrown into a different situation, or that maybe you find another way of being introspective that you haven't been before, or that you meet a new person, or whatever the exact perfect set of circumstances might need to be, mm-hmm. that you realize that, there is this other side to me. I mean, think about how many of us went our whole lives, vanilla, missionary sex, turn the lights off, pull the covers up, don't look at me mm-hmm. naked. And now, from a submissive perspective, we're naked and kneeling every moment we can, right? Like, think about that shift.
My, how things have changed.
Right. And some people grow up and know they're kinky. I've met a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
I find that fascinating, because I was so sexually repressed for so long mm-hmm. that I can't even imagine. But most of us, we thought we were one thing, and even if we had thoughts about kink or BDSM or just anything that wasn't what we thought was, quote, okay, once we learned about this part of ourselves and then embraced it, sometimes it's a two-step process. You learn about it, you have the freak out, oh my gosh, and then you embrace it. Some of mm-hmm. us just found it and embraced it. Then you've learned something completely new about yourself. The assumptions you had about yourself are out the freaking window.
Right.
So you already know that you can do that, that you can make mm-hmm. that shift. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody is kinkier than they thought they were, or that everybody's supposed to be poly, or that everybody, no, the term everybody doesn't really work here. You know, mm-hmm. the only thing everybody has to worry about is communication and consent, because from what I can tell, those are the only two real standards of how you make this work. Because even what I think is safe versus what you think is safe will be two different things.
Right.
Like my risk tolerance is really, really fucking low. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you something's way riskier than another person will.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even, while we all have to be safe and understand our risks, even that can be subjective. But communication and consent, those are not subjective things.
Right.
You talk about things, you get consent. If you don't do those things, you don't have a healthy BDSM relationship.
Correct.
So whatever else you think might be true about you or your partner or your DS relationship or power exchanges in general or BDSM in general, throw that shit out the window, because it's absolutely unique to each and every one of us.
Correct.
And as you learn more, as you meet more people, as your trust in your current or future partners grows, you will learn more about yourself. And so the assumptions you're making about whatever you think at this moment a DS relationship is supposed to be, it might be the complete opposite a year from now. You might see it completely different two relationships from now. You just don't know. So while the assumptions we have about our partners and the people around us are corrected, I guess is the word, through communication, the assumptions we make about what we think DS is, what we think BDSM is supposed to be for ourselves and in general, tend to be, and tell me if you think I'm missing something here, tend to be corrected by just exposure to the lifestyle, finding resources. You know, we are huge advocates for going out into your local community. We know some people can't or won't, or, you know, there's circumstances.
Right. They have circumstances they can't.
We totally get that. But in whatever way you can gain exposure to other ways of thinking about BDSM, that is how you learn more about yourself and about the lifestyle in general. Mm-hmm. So whether it's podcasts or it's blogs or it's YouTube channels or it's books or it's whatever, the more information you can consume about BDSM, the more you'll learn and grow. Right. And the more you'll learn about the lifestyle in general, and the more you'll learn about yourself, even if what you learn is, oh no, I don't like that. Okay, that's
fine.
And
that's fine too.
That's valid.
Sometimes the only way you're going to find out that you're not truly a slave is to try to be one.
Right.
Okay. Exactly. The only way you may find out you're not a masochist is to try a little pain.
Exactly.
All right. But it doesn't make you any less of a submissive for not liking being a slave.
Right.
Okay.
Or that idea that, well, it seems like everybody, man, the moment the word everybody comes in, just you might just want to rethink it. But
everybody's doing it.
Right. Everybody likes pain. Everybody does this. No, bullshit. Everybody doesn't do nothing. Okay. Right. Ooh, the hick in me came out. Sorry, y'all. And I use hick as a term of endearment because my family members are. But... are you nodding over there? Y'all on the podcast can't. Yeah, you're right. They are.
I've met your stepdad.
I know. Oh, I know. But
he's taken me into the woods.
He has. Mm. He has, and he's shown you his gun collection.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, that was a rabbit hole. But the moment that's so okay. So let's break this down a little bit. Within your specific relationship, right, the assumptions, some of the keywords, not all, but most of them are should, I'm sure, clearly this is what happens, I think, this has got to be, like, those are the kind of the words that you might, the kind of language you're using yourself if you're making an assumption about your partner. Mm-hmm. Here's the assumptions, here's the key word, one of, probably the biggest, assumption, sign that you're making an assumption about DS and BDSM. It's either the sentence is everybody or the one way or the right way, okay? Those are the biggest indicators that you're talking mm-hmm. about a stereotype and an assumption that is not necessarily true for everybody else. And even if it feels like you're the only one in your sort of peer group, your kinky peer group, that feels a certain way about something, that doesn't mean that you're wrong about it. I do think that some introspection is always good. You want to, you know, sort of do a gut check with yourself. Okay, do I have clear consent on this? Do I understand the risk? Even though, like we said, it's a standard, mm-hmm. but it's a subjective standard because my idea of risk and your idea of risk might be two totally different things.
Yes.
Do I understand the risks of what I'm doing? And have I communicated clearly about it? And I have consent. If you've got all of those things, who gives a shit what anybody else is right. doing, okay? I don't give a fuck if you are the only kinkster on the whole planet of 7 billion people who likes to have your pinky toe tickled and that's how the fuck you orgasm. Good for you. Have at it, okay? I don't care if you're the only dominant on the planet who likes to wear your, you know, you have a penis, but you like to wear women's underwear. Have a good fucking time, y'all. You're looking at me. Am I going on a rant? I went
yeah.
on a rant.
Oh, yeah. You jumped off that cliff without any hesitation.
It's been bottled up for over a week. I get really frustrated by the people who peddle the information that there's only one way to do this. Fuck that. And I get really concerned for kinksters who fall into that trap, and then I see them go through the angst, and it's not my place to be everywhere on Twitter like the kinky fairy telling people that they're okay.
We all do, I think. In the early days.
I think we all
do. If I don't act like an arrogant narcissist, I'm not dominant.
And guess what? If you had acted like an arrogant narcissist, you'd been single.
Yeah.
Because most of them are, eventually. Yeah. But see, that's the thing. Like, I see the angst that goes on online, you know, and I see the comments, and I know people are going through it, and we can't fix it for everybody. People,
no.
You know, have to not only be willing to listen to us, and I could see why some people would be like, oh, no, can't. But they also have to, it has to ring true. You have to be in a place where you're ready to hear these things. So I'm going to bottom line it so I can maybe not go on another rant. Because to me, this, I put both of these, we did this whole assumption topic because they're kind of simple. I can't talk for an hour about not making assumptions in your relationship. Yeah. So I'm not going to try. But let's bottom line this. If you are making any assumptions about what your partner thinks or how they feel or what they're going to do or what's going to happen next, and you haven't been told one way or the other and you haven't had a conversation about it, the very first thing you have to do is have a conversation.
Yes.
You might have to plan the conversation. Mm-hmm. You might have to be patient for the conversation. It might be a difficult conversation, but you will never know for certain what the hell's going on without the conversation.
Right. And it doesn't matter how you have the conversation.
No, it doesn't.
Have it face to face, have it by text, have it by email, have it by whatever way it's easy for you to open up and get the words out.
Right.
But get the words out.
Exactly. On the flip side, yes, we all, I think, fall prey, especially in the beginning of BDSM, but I know as somebody who's not exactly new anymore that it happens to me too, about what we think it means to be DS, what we think it means to be submissive, dominant in a BDSM relationship, to seem to have a power exchange, whatever, right? And we see examples and we see stereotypes, and sometimes we feel like we don't measure up and other people are doing things that we're not doing, and we wonder what that means about our place in the kink spectrum, okay? The key things are, do you have consent to do it? Are you talking about it? Do you understand the risks? I'm not going to like gloss over that.
No.
Does it feel fucking good to you? Does it make you happy? Does it make you feel fulfilled? Does it make you go, yes, this is my fucking thing? Then it is the right thing. And I don't care how many people out there appear to do it or not. Okay. Because that's the other thing. What you see online is not the whole of the kink community. We know plenty of people who are very involved in our local kink community, and they're like, what's a Twitter? Okay?
Yeah.
So, like, they barely have a FetLife profile, and some of them don't even have that because they're perfectly happy in their relationship, and they don't want to bring this online. So what you see online in whatever venue you're in
is just one small slice of the pie.
Teeny tiny slice. It is a fraction of what's really out there. So the more you can broaden your horizons for resources and places where you get information, the better. And if you'll just do that self-check of how does it make me feel and how does my partner feel about this with me, the rest doesn't matter.
Right.
And then hopefully we can start throwing some assumptions out the window.
Out the window.
Yes.
Yep.
That's all I have to say about that.
Okay.
I ranted so hard at that one point, my throat hurts.
You,
though.
I know. That's why I just kind of sat back and looked at you, because you just like,
exploded.
You were like a dog with a bone.
I have been waiting to do a real rant,
you
I think.
You sunk your teeth in that bone and you weren't letting go for nothing.
So here's, this is pre-bonus section, but just so you understand, the last episode, episode 142, we recorded the Sunday before it went live. We are recording this episode the very day before it goes live.
Yeah.
So it's a week and a half between recording.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels very strange to me to not have a regular schedule. So it's been pent up. And I, you know, has been. Well, and not like, I think ranting in general, because I was traveling with family and I wasn't going to, I went on a mini rant with my family member. I did. She asked a question that she was not prepared for the answer. but I have had to sort of like play nice for about 10 days.
Yes.
Just had to, had that, as my therapist always says, whatever you repress will come out in other ways.
One way or another, it will surface, yes.
That was it.
Yeah, that is true.
So we do have a bonus section. We got mail, even though I don't know what I just did with it.
I
think it's at my desk.
Okay, I'll snatch that in a minute.
And we'll talk about my trip for anybody who's a little curious. Okay. But other than that, that's all I have to say.
That's all you have? Okay, I think we're good. I'm ready to move on to the bonus section. I got a thing or two to say myself.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, wow. Are we going to have to thumb wrestle for who gets to go first?
I'm going first, baby girl.
Yeah, okay, daddy.
There you go.
That's easy.
See, that was easy. All right.
That was easy.
Okay.
Okay. So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
And to tell the people who aren't crickets to have a nice day?
Yes.
And it was lovely to have them here.
Absolutely. Always.
And we enjoyed having coffee with them.
Always. Oh,
even if you weren't drinking coffee, we were.
Whether you're drinking water, Coke, tea, I don't care.
Driving down the highway, cussing at traffic.
It's always nice to sit down and share a drink with company.
Exactly.
Okay?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. You ready?
Vaguely.
Okay.
Keep it kinky, y'all. And we'll see you next week. Dottie.
Yes, baby girl.
Can I talk?
When don't you talk, girl?
Maybe when I'm sleeping, but I'm pretty sure I'm still talking in my sleep.
If I stayed awake, you'd probably be ranting in your sleep.
I did almost talk you to sleep last night, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
I was talking and talking, and you were snoozing.
And my head's nodding.
And I was so oblivious. I was like, I finally looked at you and said, you're not going to remember this conversation tomorrow, are you?
You know, I have to say something real quick. Totally unrelated to this. But the fact that I have to get up and go to your desk makes me glad I'm actually wearing something other than my underwear today.
Well,
with the camera going.
I would have gotten up. So for those of you who can see us on YouTube, and if you are a podcast listener and need a reason to go check us out on YouTube, I have a shirt that might have to become my new podcast shirt. It says, keep it sassy. Let me see if I can stand up so you can see it on camera. Ooh, there we go. Keep it sassy. I'm really bad with moving backwards across.
Yeah, I know. I get it confused, too.
I know.
It's the
my perception is all weird. But yes, my shirt says, keep it sassy, and I think I have.
But you know what? I have to say that this is, what, your third day home now?
On the day we're recording, yes.
Yes. And, you know, the first... A couple days that you were home.
Oh my gosh.
You've been rather subdued.
Cranky. I've been cranky, but I've been keeping it to myself.
I'm trying to be nice. You've been rather subdued. While you had a good time, the trip was a little bumpy for you.
Yeah, it was.
Today, I've kind of started seeing your little sassy side coming back.
It's full throttle, quite frankly. Other than I still have a lingering headache that I think it's just from being tired. And I'm looking at my schedule going, why did I say I would do this much work this week? I feel more myself.
Okay.
I do feel more myself.
The other thing I wanted to say real quick, and then I'll hand you the postcard.
Okay.
Because then I'll have had my say.
Oh, okay.
Okay? For the most part.
Yeah.
I had a rather enjoyable conversation on Tumblr with a expat living in Australia.
Oh, cool.
And they messaged me to ask me questions about coffee.
That's awesome.
And apparently... they are now a new convert to the dark roast side. And have come over to the coffee side.
Yeah. Dark roast is the only kind I want to drink, quite frankly.
So, on that note, look at those grabby hands.
grabby hands! We finally got mail, and this is from one of our Twitter friends, at Kneeling Sub.
Mm-hmm.
And she sent us a postcard... I hope I didn't misgender you. I'm sorry, Kneeling Sub. I've always made an assumption and that's not okay. The postcard, I'm going to try and put it on camera. Y'all know I suck at this. is from New Hampshire and it is beautiful.
Yep.
And Kneeling Sub.
Field of Wildflowers.
Yes, it is a field of wildflowers. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And Kneeling Sub sent it while on a business trip. So that's cool. So see, you don't have to send them from home. If you go traveling, send us a postcard. We love that. You've been waiting to do that vape, haven't you? That was like a piercing sound in my ear. If you would like to send us a postcard and we will show it. I'm going to take a picture. So we're recording on Thursday. The episode goes live on Friday. Sometime between now and then, I'll pop it on Instagram too for anybody who wants to see it. Link for that badly titled postcard project, because I'm no longer giving out the mailing address, because in 2019 we'll be moving.
Mm-hmm, and that will be changing.
Right. And so it's got me all paranoid. So thank you, Kneeling Sub. We love this. It was nice to get mail. Mm-hmm. So I'm away traveling and I get a text that says, "We got mail." And I'm like, "Oh, is it my package from the Butters?"
No.
I was like, "But I'm waiting for a package from the Butters. Is it sex toys?" No. But it's a postcard. Oh, awesome. So I'm still waiting on my package from the Butters, though, as of the moment we're recording. So it might be there. So yay. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. We'll put a picture up for anybody who wants to see it. I traveled.
Yes.
And I came back.
Yes.
The trip was good. So I didn't really talk much about it because I was in such a, before I left, I mean, because I was in such a mode of, oh my gosh, I've got so much work to do, that I never really focused on the trip until we were literally in the airport. And I was like, oh yeah, we're going to Oregon. But I just didn't have time. And I didn't plan this trip. So I didn't have to keep up with any of the details. I literally just had to show up. It was kind of nice. Yeah. But it was a cross-stitch convention. So I cross-stitch. Some people know it as embroidery, but embroidery is something slightly different. But it's still thread and needle and whatever. And that's like my thing that zens me out. And my aunt and my great grandmother taught me when I was like 8 years old. So I've been doing it for 30 years off and on. My aunt loves it. There's a convention for it, because of course there is. I also learned about another convention, and you should be lucky I've not Googled it yet. It's called StitchCon.
Oh boy.
I know. But it's put on by this company that sells cross stitch patterns that are beautiful. Mm. They're based on art, called Heaven and Earth Designs. So it's actually a Heaven and Earth Design convention. It was in Seaside, Oregon. It was 50 some odd degrees in August. I had to bring jeans and socks.
I was so jealous when you told me
that.
It
was so cold.
It hit 105 here one day.
Oh my God. It hit 54, I think, was the lowest. And at one point, so it was also really breezy because it's right by the ocean, and I'm outside the convention center having a conversation, and my teeth were chattering because I brought jeans and I brought closed-toed shoes, and I did not bring a jacket because I don't have a jacket that's like a hoodie anymore.
Because you're a Southern girl.
Right. Like, I have one jacket, and it's what I bring with me to London because that's the only place I can wear it anymore. So, but it was, what ended up happening is we were stitching until like 10:30 at night. Mm-hmm. Every night we would stop to go get dinner or to run an errand. Like, we had to go to the craft store at one point. I ran out of a color thread, and then we would come right back and we'd have our Starbucks, or we'd have our, you know, diet soda or whatever our caffeine of choice was at that moment of the day. And we would get right back to stitching. Like, that is what we did the whole time. And my aunt's trying to tell my uncle, and I'm trying to tell John Brownstone about how much fun we're having. And they're like, but it's 10 o'clock at night and you're stitching? Yes. Yes, it was a lot of fun. It was very relaxing. But the flights were good, except on the way back, flying over the Rocky Mountains is an experience if you've never done it.
It was a little rocky, wasn't it?
It was a lot rocky. It was, I don't get motion sickness, but it was the closest I've come to motion sickness, because there was, you know, fairly bad turbulence. It's not the worst turbulence I've ever been through. The worst turbulence I've ever been through, I honestly thought the plane was going down, because the pilot never came on. And this is years ago. The pilot never came on and said, this is bad turbulence. Just we hit it and we went through it. This time it was like, we're going to hit turbulence. I'm going to have the attendants sit down. We're not doing, you know, drink service through this. Just hold on and we'll get through it. And we did, and I did so by holding my aunt's hand, because I broke out in a full body sweat.
Oh,
like,
boy.
I didn't have a panic attack. I didn't start crying. I have done those things on flights before, but I was trying to keep my composure and my body, all my reflexive things like sweat and heart rate and all that, things I can't control. They all turned on and triggered. They were like, no, 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 you're terrified right now. I don't care how cool you're trying to play it. The only flight that was delayed was the very last leg of our flight back into Florida, which was annoying because we were already getting back at midnight, but it was the last leg of the flight. So it wasn't like we were going to miss any flights or anything. And let's see, anything else that was interesting... I met people who can spend thousands of dollars at a cross stitch convention. I know. I did not have that kind of money.
Thank you.
Or that kind of desire. I mean, I bought some really pretty things. I'm very happy with my souvenirs. But this is only there are certain things I'm talking about that if you're not a person who sews or stitches or goes to conventions for things you love, well, you'd probably be like, what is this? But this is the one thing that I could not wait to get back and tell a kink audience. So there was an artist there named Jeff Haney, and he's worked on movies, he's worked on games, he's worked on all kinds of stuff. His motif for his like personal art that he sells is cats. And I'm standing up there looking at his art, and there's this print on like the side of his booth. And I went, oh my gosh. And my aunt, who sees that it's a really cool looking print, but does not understand the significance, and everybody will know when I say the name, is like, yeah, that's really cool. I'm like, no, you don't understand. And of course, the whole time I have to refer to my daddy as John because it's my aunt and she's vanilla and she doesn't know. And I'm like, fuck. I'm like, well, John, oh, that felt so awful in my mouth. I didn't say that part. I'm telling y'all, that was my internal dialogue. He would love that. He loves these things because it was cats, which John Brownstone does love cats, and it was steampunk, and John Brownstone does love steampunk. But the name, the cat was holding, some people could say it's a cup of tea. I'm going to say it's a cup of coffee because of course it is. But the name of this artwork is Steampunk Cat Daddy. And while I could not afford the print on the wall, I bought the cross stitch pattern. It might take me 5 years to complete. It's one of those. But by God in hell, at some point in our lives, we will have on the wall something named Steampunk Cat Daddy. Yeah. I was like, this is the kinkiest thing I've seen all week. But I also had a moment.
There's more.
That's not related to the art. So yes, I did. And I bought John Brownstone a bookmark of that print.
Yes.
So he could have that while he waited. Because it really could be a few years. But we were in the convention center the very first day. We were like registering. We were doing something. I was feeling a little out of place because both my aunt and I are extremely introverted. And she wasn't seeing anybody she knew yet because she had been before or whatever. And we're sort of sitting there, and I'm kind of minding my own business. And it is the coolest thing and yet the worst thing that I did not figure this out. I could have sworn that somebody at that convention said about their spouse that she was his slave. And not in an ironic, you know, I do everything, I'm a domestic. No, like, seriously. And I couldn't, my head could not whip around fast enough to try and see who that was so I could see if my kink dar was working. And like, I was really hearing that correctly, or if it was, you know, my imagination was playing tricks on me and I never figured it out. And it was the mystery for me of the whole damn week. I was like, who did they say slave? Did they mean it the way I think they meant it? Because it's how I interpreted it.
Mm-hmm.
And who the fuck are they? It killed me. It killed me. Because you have to assume kinky people are everywhere. So in any crowd you're in, somebody is kinky. You're not the only one.
Kinky.
But I couldn't find out who. I did have a suspicion about an artist couple who the artist is really cool. I will not name the name just in case because they might be kinky and not want to be outed. But the artist was there and his wife was there with him.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something about them that made me think, I bet they're kinky. Now, I didn't sense power exchange in any way, but I did go, I would be surprised if you were not kinky. So yeah, but yes, somebody, I swear, my hearing's not always great, and if I'm not paying attention, you know, but I always hear little snippets of conversations, and I always hear like just a little bit, and then I don't know what the hell I actually heard. I swear that's what I heard.
Things that make you go,
I know. I was like, oh, who is it? Did I hear that right? But then I probably wouldn't have even said anything even if I had been right, because true. I'd have been like, well, maybe they don't want to be outed here, because, you know. But yeah, so that was my the little teeny tiny ways that kink interjected itself at my very vanilla Stitch concert convention. I do want to say a thing that's something's been making the rounds on Twitter, and I want to make sure that people who listen to us, especially Crickets, because you guys listen to a lot of the things we say and pay attention to a lot of things we do. So somebody did a thing on Twitter about every time they hear the term vanilla used by somebody who's kinky, that they hear it in a really negative light and they think it's really pejorative and it's really rude and it's meant to like demean. And yes, I too have heard the term vanilla used in that way, as if by saying somebody is vanilla, you are saying that they are somehow less than or lower than. First of all, we do not condone the use of that term, kinky, non-kinky, whatever your flavor is. I want everybody to have healthy relationships. I don't care what your flavor is. Two, when you hear me, and you don't do it as often as so, no. But it's really us, but it's mostly me because I use the word a lot. If you hear me, Kayla Lords, use the word vanilla, it is a descriptor, because to me, saying non-kinky is really clunky. And I have found it's just easier to go vanilla, kinky, and it has no ill intent behind it at all. I refer to my own life, sides of my life, as kinky and vanilla. You know, when I have to go live my life by my legal name and, you know, be my aunt's niece at a cross stitch convention, that's my vanilla life. And I don't think of that as less than. I don't think of that as an insult. I might be a little annoyed by it because I'd love to be kinky all the time. But for me, it's a descriptor. So while
it's as much of a choice for somebody as...
Well, sure it is. But the word gets used and thrown around as an insult. Like it is somehow distasteful to be vanilla.
Like a derogatory.
Exactly. And yes, people use it that way. And no, I don't agree with that. And I don't want anybody to use it that way in my presence. But I also don't want anybody to think I am using it that way. So I figured just throw the disclaimer out there that I don't feel the need to stop using the term vanilla. Because if you can't hear that I'm not being negative... Or if you ever think I'm being negative, I hope you would say something. But that's not how I use it to describe myself. So just so we're all clear. But yes, officially using it as a derogatory term just because somebody's not kinky or is not as kinky as you are, that's not cool.
No.
And we do not, we're not okay with that.
No, not at all. Don't condone that at all.
Right. So there we go.
Okay.
That's all I've got. Okay. I think that's enough.
Yeah.
Do we have anything? I know we have to record our behind the scenes podcast for Patreon in the next week or so. But other than that, I think we're finally going to start getting kind of back to normal. We got to start doing stuff around the house. So that'll be the next thing I'm complaining about in the bonus section.
I'm dreading the wallpaper.
I am too.
I am dreading the wallpaper.
But you know what's going to be nice? When it's done.
Yeah.
And when we say we're dreading wallpaper, we have to
remove wallpaper.
We don't put up wallpaper. We take it down and we repaint.
I haven't talked to you about this yet, but I'm actually considering getting a steamer if that's going to make it down easy.
We'll put it out to our crickets because we have taken down wallpaper and we've also taken down wall with it.
Yeah.
So if you have an opinion on that or you have experience... Reach out to us and let us know what you think, because we'll take advice. We're not too proud of that.
We've tried several methods at this point the store-bought chemical.
And vinegar and water, boiling water.
Vinegar and boiling water.
And now, steam would be our next option.
Yeah, both took it down, but it also took down chunks of the wall.
Now we have wall to patch. It's really bad. So, that's our next thing. So just like a couple years ago, if anybody remembers, I bitched about the backyard patio every time we had to work on that.
Get ready for it, folks. Here
I'll
it comes
bitching
again.
Bitching about this kitchen. I'll be complaining so hard about this stupid ass kitchen. But I will also be very, very happy when it's done.
Yeah.
Because the kitchen and a couple little odds and ends are all we have left to do around the house before we put it up on the market next year. So
yep.
things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but we need to go.
Yep, we do.
Because we got shit to do.
We do.
But it's nice to be back.
Yes, it is.
And to feel more
it's
like
good
myself.
Good to have you back.
It's good to be back with you. We got to lay down in the bed together naked and just cuddle, even though you were mostly falling asleep on me. But that's okay. Mm-hmm. We were there together.
Right.
And I was just talking and talking, much like I do on the podcast.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, it's totally real. Yeah, what you hear on the podcast, that's what it's like when there's no microphone turned on.
24/7.
Yes. Yes, that is true. That is so true. Yes. Yeah. And I rant just as hard. I drop more F-bombs with you than I do
yes,
on the show.
You do.
So if you think I'm dropping a lot of F-bombs, just don't come to my house.
Oh, please.
Okay, we're going to go now, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, everybody.
We love you guys.
We love you.
Bye. Bye.